Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And, well, not really a lot going on in hockey this week, I gotta say.
It's been a bit slow.
There is and there isn't, I guess. Like, nothing major is happening. Although it does feel like some major stuff could happen in the near future. And we'll, I guess we'll talk about that.
Probably an hour after.
100%. Yeah. But I wanted to lead off talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame. And we touched on it a little last week. I'm not, like, mad about anybody who got in this year.
No.
Because I'm not, like, a 52-year-old Canadian guy.
But even if you are that guy, like, the time to be mad is in the summer when the class gets announced. When they get inducted, you just got to be like,
cool. No, you get it's a 2-for-1. You get to be mad twice. It rocks.
I just stay mad. 12 months a year.
That's my secret.
Yep.
Hockey Hall of Fame. Yeah, so I guess, you know, again, am I like a big, oh, Daniel Alfredson should be in the Hall of Fame? I don't even think maybe, like, there's an argument that the Sedins kind of shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, although I'm not. Again, those guys have, like, MVP awards. I'm not going to get mad about it. Luongo's the only one where I was like, yeah, no question about it for me. This is an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's like an outrageous thing to put out there. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not from Ottawa or whatever. But
no, Ottawa fans would unanimously say Daniel Alfredson's a Hall of Famer, but I think everyone else can see that it's a gray area call. It's like I have just a whole group of guys where I'm like, look, my Hall of Fame stance on these guys is I won't be mad either way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not. I think Alfredson, you know, he had been eligible for a few years, and every time he didn't get in and people up here got really mad, I was like, no, I mean, you look at the numbers, you can't be mad that he's not in. But then when he did get in, I was like, okay, sure.
That's fine.
You know, who cares? Like, he was a borderline case, and you know, borderline cases very often eventually do get in.
Yep. I read the thing Pierre LeBrun wrote about it, and I think what he said kind of resonated with me of, like, basically he said, you know, if you're a small hall guy, the tide's gone out on what you're looking for here.
Mm-hmm.
We're done with that. Which is, like, that really, I was like, yeah, I guess I would never say I was, like, a really small hall guy, but I was often saying, like, that guy, you know what I mean? So maybe I am a small hall guy and I didn't.
There have been two, I would say, like, indefensively bad selections in the last few years. And that's Guy Carboneau and Kevin.
Henrik Sedin.
Carboneau and Lowe both should not
absolutely
have been in.
Yeah.
Both of them, you know, I mean, it's the case was very, very weak. Carboneau especially so. And I bring that up only because I have seen, you know, this is the time of year where people start throwing out their favorite players and making the case why they should. And those guys get brought up. You know, if Guy Carboneau's in the Hall of Fame, then what about? And,
right,
you know, I'm not small hall, but I'm also not like, we can't just let in everyone who is better than Guy Carboneau. Because we literally don't have enough slots with four players a year. I mean, there's
forever, yeah.
Yeah, it's and you know, same with Kevin Lowe. And so I guess all I would say, I'm not a small hall guy, but if your argument for a player invokes either of those names, it's probably a bad argument. Because at the end of the day, like, they screwed up. It's a committee. It's private. You know, Carboneau and Lowe are both guys who've worked in hockey and probably have a lot of friends, and we can figure out how it all went down. But that doesn't mean that now, like, Yeri Laitinen has to get in the Hall of Fame because Guy Carboneau did.
Right. Yeah, like I say, I think for me, I hope that I remember that this is my take. I'm done caring about who is in or not in the Hall of Fame. Because if we're going to get worked up about fucking Paul Henderson every year, and hey, granted, they just, I don't know if you saw, but Scott Morrison got added to the committee. Okay. And Scott Morrison just wrote, like just published a book about the 72 Summit Series. So
I feel like I really hope that this year being the 50-year anniversary, that like we dodge the bullet this year. Because I love Paul Henderson. He's not only did he score very famous goals for Team Canada, he was a Maple Leaf, before my time, but still, ex-Leaf guy has been around the team. Big Paul Henderson fan. He can't be in the Hall of Fame. No, like the argument ridiculous. Is crazy to me that based on one goal,
yesterday it's three goals.
It's three goals. Yeah, we all remember. Here's the thing that struck me as weird. I saw people were arguing like most famous goal, and somebody was like, well, it's definitely the most iconic goal. And I'm like, if you went up to hockey fans and you were like, describe in detail the Paul, without watching it, describe the Paul Henderson goal in detail, the way that you would for an iconic goal. I don't feel like a lot of people, they'd be like, I think he was like kind of in front of the net and he shot the puck in, like... It's not like the Bobby Orr goal or any number of other ones.
Where Sidney
you're like,
Crosby, oh, yeah, like, 2010.
Like, yeah, you know, you're like,
that's
yeah,
the most iconic goal of all time. Sorry,
you would think, and Sidney Crosby should go in the Hall of Fame. So, checkmate.
That's true. He should. You know what? I agree. That's not going to be a tough sell for me. Sidney Crosby,
Paul Henderson,
should
like
be in the hockey.
It's like I said to somebody. Like if Rob Zamner had scored the gold medal winning goal in the 98 Olympics, that would have been cool as hell. And also, he should not have been in the Hall of Fame. It's a crazy. And
he
have you noticed
even be
this?
In the Hall of Fame if you only let in Joe Thornton line mates? Like that's where Rob Zamner's at, right?
Have you noticed this? Am I imagining this, or it feels like there is a certain argument that has come out more in the last year or so? I don't remember hearing it very much, but I've heard it a lot for Paul Henderson. I've heard it for a few other candidates where people say, you know, it's not a hall of greatness or a hall of statistics. It's a hall of fame, and if the player is famous, they should be in the hall. And Paul Henderson and those goals are so famous,
mm-hmm.
you know, or this player is so iconic with his team and, you know, is so well. Yeah. And I'm just kind of like, I get that there is an element of it where you're like, yeah, this player was really well known for certain. But I mean, does that feel new to you, or have people always been saying that? I was just tuning it out.
I think the people who are real freaks about certain candidates who should by all rights have no shot have like found a new like plan of attack.
Okay.
For you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they're just like, oh, this is actually it's not the Hall of Very Good, but it is the Hall of Fame, and fame is a thing that I can use for or get. Now the thing with saying fame is. If you go and look at who's in the Hockey Hall of Fame, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, I've never heard of this guy.
That's what I say. Like, if it's a Hall of Fame, then there should be like three people in the Hockey Hall of Fame, right? Like, it should be like Gordie Howe, Wayne Gretzky, and Bobby Orr, and that's it. And like, you know, maybe Sidney Crosby gets in someday, but like, that seems like a very weird argument for the NHL. Well, and then people turn around and they use it on the strangest guy. Like, can I just throw out a name that I want to get your feedback
sure,
on?
Sure.
I know you've just finished saying that you don't particularly care, but I'd love to get your opinion on this because I'm fascinated by how this case has played out over the last decade. Where are you at with Rod Brind'Amour?
I guess I would say no, but as he continues to build up his like coaching career, I think the case improves just because you can maybe put him in as like kind of a hybrid builder.
Yeah. Now keeping in mind that in theory, that's not on the table. In theory, player and builder are completely separate categories. And
right. You get
now, again, like, did it help Kevin Lowe's case that he was a GM and, you know, did all this stuff? Absolutely.
Well, it shouldn't have, first of all.
Well, yeah, but it
for, I'm saying just because he was bad at being a GM, like famous.
Excuse me, I think he knows a thing or two about winning. Wasn't that his press conference quote where he was getting all, remember he had that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it rocked. But I'll tell you exactly what this, like, new hall of quote-unquote fame we're talking about here is. I was talking to someone about the Hobie Baker Award over the weekend given to the most outstanding player in college hockey. And that's all it says in, like, the description or, you know, like, the headline. And then if you, like, look at the fine print, they go, oh, he's going to be a nice guy, too, or whatever. He's going to, like, volunteer, whatever, you know. And the thing I always say is they only use that aspect of it if they decide this is a guy who does not deserve the Hobie Baker, but we've decided he's going to win it. Like Dryden McKay last year, you know, the goalie that just kind of they decided halfway through the season, this guy's going to win it. Didn't even matter that he wasn't the best goalie in college hockey. It was because he's really nice or whatever. And it's like,
I just want to point out that he signed with the Maple Leafs, so my opinion of him.
Well, right, and that he also got banned by the anti-doping. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oops. But it's the same thing. It's like, well, no, I know he doesn't like deserve it, but like he's famous or he's nice or whatever, and that's it's the same. So people just decide who they want to win stuff, and the. Drew Doughty, perfect fucking example. We decided Drew Doughty was going to win the Norris one year, and so we did, and we had him win it. That's how it works.
Here's my thing on Brind'Amour, because did you see the thing on ESPN where somebody was like listing the candidates for next year?
What's Gong, that guy's name?
Gong Wiflipski.
Sorry. That sounds right. Yeah,
I'm sorry if I Gong. If I pronounce your last name wrong, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize. He's got Henrik Lundqvist number one.
Lock Henrik Lundqvist.
He's got a few women mentioned, and I mean they should be inducting. They've got a backlog, and the fact that they keep inducting just one instead of two to be stubborn is a jerk move.
Insane. I'll say this. Can I say this real quick on that? It's ridiculous that people are going, well, what about Paul Henderson? Meanwhile, like the third greatest woman to ever play hockey.
Yeah.
Like she has to beg and plead to get in as the one person who gets in per game.
And
it's fucking outrageous.
And especially the fact that, you know, with the women, it's, you know, because of the lack of a, you know, a really high level pro league.
Yeah.
It's all international accomplishments.
Yep.
But they're like, okay, but what about this one guy who had a good week internationally? And they're like, I've got four gold medals. Yeah, but this guy.
Yeah, Salonen, like literally the best player in the world at, you know, for what, like a decade maybe? And the problem is it was before a lot of people started watching women's hockey in a serious way. That's why. And, you know, I guess you can make the argument that, like, women's hockey wasn't really taken seriously at the international level for a really long time. And so, like, it isn't really her fault. I guess that's my point, though. It's not her fault that she happened to be the best player pre-1998 or whatever.
Yep.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that. Like, that we're trying to really squeeze in all these bums from the men's side. But, like, a woman who's like, oh no, I spent like a decade as the best player alive. And people are like,
and not because they're putting other people in, but because they're literally just leaving an empty one slot. Just being like, no, we're not going to use, we can't find anyone else.
It's ridiculous.
Number three on Gong's list is Alexander McGillney. Absolutely. I mean, no defense for that omission. Then he's got Sergei Gonchar. A few of the other names he mentions: Curtis Joseph, Henrik Zetterberg in his second year. Keith Tkachuk is still an interesting one. But then he's got Brind'Amour as number six on his list, number four among the men's players. So in theory, this means that if he was picking, he would put, you know, that would be his class, would be Lundqvist, McGillney, Gonchar, Brind'Amour. And here's the thing. I said, like, the evolution. I remember 10 years ago, I wrote a piece about Marian Hossa. And this is when Hossa was still active. But at the time, I had people telling me, like, slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. And I was like, really? Like, is Marian Hossa going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer? Turns out he was. Yeah. Those people were right. But I was kind of looking at the case going, like, you know, like, yeah, he's going to have over 1,000 points. He's a good two-way player. And I remember at the time, I said, why would Marian Hossa be a slam dunk if nobody even considers Rod Brind'Amour to be in the discussion? And I'm someone who, I follow this stuff pretty closely.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, you never heard Rod Brind'Amour's name.
Right.
And I said, but this guy had 1,200 points, and he had two Selkies, and Marian Hossa never won a Selkie. So I said, you know, why would
Marian Hossa never won a Selkie? What a world we live in.
No, he was a winger, so.
Yeah, I mean, sure, that's why.
But, you know, I was just trying to make the point that, hey, maybe Hossa's case isn't as strong as you think because it seems pretty comparable to a guy who is getting, like I said, no buzz at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that that influenced anyone. I'm just saying 10 years ago, whenever I wrote it, you just never heard Rod Brind'Amour's name. And over time, it has sort of, his case seems to have like gained momentum. And I think a lot of it's because he was coaching, you know, because he's the success he's had as a coach, and he's still been very visible and all of that. But, you know, to the point now where, you know, places like ESPN are listing him as like a guy who should be in. And I know there's like Carolina fans that are just absolutely adamant on this. And I'm just kind of sitting there going like, Rod Brind'Amour?
Yeah.
Like a guy who was the second line center on his team for his entire career. Like never. And you know, I had someone say, well, yeah, because he played behind Eric Lindros and Ron Francis. And okay, sure. But like, 1,200 points is great, but he played for 20 years. So we're talking like average 60 points a year, including at least some of that in very high scoring era. Yeah, he won the two Selkies, which is great. But again, like, are we putting Yeri Laitinen in for having three? Are we putting
Pekka
in? You know,
we are
and again,
like that's the point.
The first thing, the ESPN, the very first thing, Guy Carboneau went in the Hall of Fame in 2019 and left the door open for Brind'Amour. Yeah, I get it. But and the other thing that I've had multiple people make the case, because there, I will tell you, there's people in the hockey world love Rod Brind'Amour. They just love the guy. So they're trying to find a reason. But I've had multiple people say, well, think of the influence he had on fitness in this game. Like his. And I'm just is that? I get it, but.
I guess the Warlord should be in the WWE Hall of Fame because of how yoked he was, right? Like, is that what we're saying here? Like,
it wasn't stupid, right? It's not just like, hey, the guy was ripped. It's the habits and everything, and you know that he was sort of at the forefront.
Put Gary Roberts in the Hall of Fame then.
That was exactly what I've said in a few cases too, and so I don't know. I just don't feel like the case for Brind'Amour is very strong.
It's too late. The horse is out of the barn. Who cares? You know, this is my point. I could get mad about, like, Rod Brind'Amour. That probably doesn't really deserve it, like, if we're being serious. But seems like everybody's just decided we're maybe 2-3 years away from Rod Brind'Amour making it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, and like, I just decided I can't get fucking mad about this shit anymore. Because these people don't take it seriously. Why should I?
One season in his 20-year career. And you know, when you're talking Rod Brind'Amour, by the way, the 20 years, like he played a full 20 years. This isn't like there are guys where it's like you say they played this many years, but they have like a few seasons where they only played one or two. Like he played 20 full seasons. He had 1 year where he got Hart Trophy votes.
Yeah. No, hey,
19 years where nobody was even talking. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I just don't see him as.
We are a decade away from a Shane Doan candidacy. 100%. Not even a question in my mind.
I feel like we might be closer than that.
He played 1,500 games. He didn't score. He didn't get to 1,000 points. He barely got over 400 goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy who played 21 seasons in the NHL. And it would have been more, you know, with lockouts and everything. But it's like this guy played 1,500 games. He was never, I don't think he ever once got a single Hart vote. Yeah, I'm looking here. A couple of times. His highest Selke finish is 25th, right? Like, but he has a Messier Leadership Award from like 5 years before he retired. He won the King Clancy. And once Arizona becomes like an actual good hockey market, if it ever happens, they're going to go, there is instantly going to be a, well, Shane Doan should be in the Hall of Fame push. It's going to happen. And yeah. I can't get mad about it anymore. That's it. I'm done. I hope I remember this take in the summer.
And I won't let you.
Great.
I'm going to fire you. I'm going to be like, remember 6 months ago you said that this was really important to you personally? And
Don't gaslight me, please.
Here's Rod Brind'Amour's top, and this is not a perfect stat, but his top three similarity score, the Hockey Reference similarity score, where they compare your point shares across career, et cetera. Same three guys, whether you do, career or 21-year. His three most similar players, Vincent Danfus, Jason Arnott, Ray Whitney.
Great. All good players.
He's not all a Hall of Famer. But I just feel like, obviously. 10 years ago, like I was one of the very first people to mention his name. And, you know, now I'm like.
Derisively.
Oh, wait a second. Hold on. No. Like of all my takes. All my wise takes that nobody buys into, this seems to be the one that has actually had some sort of minor influence, and it was one that I was trying to make the exact opposite point.
You did reverse psychology to the voters.
I'm just saying, Rod, when you get in next year, you got to thank me in the speech.
That's right.
And then please don't beat me up afterwards.
He's definitely going to. The other thing I guess we should mention is Boreas Salming made the trip out from Sweden. Awesome.
That was so cool.
And it was really, really cool.
So he, you know, if people don't know, the legendary defenseman of the 70s with the Maple Leafs and into the 80s, the first Swedish star to come across, really the first European star in the NHL, was an amazing player and also just, you can only imagine, I'm sure, the crap he had to put up with in the 70s. As like the first European star in an era where we all knew that Europeans were soft and scared. And so you've got all of these Canadians ready to take a run at this guy in the 70s when taking runs at guys was just part of the game, just constantly running at him, suckering him, doing everything to get him to quit and go back home. And he puts up with all of it, is one of the best defensemen of the era. One of the most beloved Maple Leafs of all time, and then this summer announced he's battling ALS, and it's a very tough fight for him. I mean, ALS is always just a real bastard, but I guess in his case, it's even tougher than maybe it would be ordinarily. But he was able to get out there. He can no longer speak. Has a very difficult time even getting around, but Elliot Friedman, I thought in his 32 Thoughts this week, had a really good piece about that, because he talked about some of the people behind the scenes making it happen. Like you see, like me as a fan, like you see Salming come out and it's amazing. And he was with Daryl Sittler, and like Sittler's in tears and Sundin's there. And it was just like a fantastic moment. But you just kind of think that, you know, it doesn't just happen. Like a guy, like, he doesn't just materialize in Toronto, and like there was this whole behind the scenes thing happening to make that happen and to give that moment to the Leafs and Leaf fans and to Salming and his family. And then the Leafs on Saturday night, they started like six all Swedish Swedes players, like, yeah, which was just awesome. Cool as hell. It was great. It was just like, you know, I come on this podcast and just complain constantly about everything. This was just a pure like 10 out of 10 fantastic moment. No notes, no, you know, it was done absolutely perfectly, and couldn't have happened to a more deserving guy.
Yeah, that was one of those things, you know, they always say like, who does ceremony better than Montreal, you know? And this is right up there with the best of what Montreal has done since I've been watching.
And Toronto very often doesn't do that stuff well, but this was just, you know, and like huge ovation from the fans, and you know, like Sittler like lifting his arm so that Salming could wave to the fans. Like, if you're not if you're not getting choked up watching that, I don't.
Yep.
I don't know, man. Like, there's that was highlight of the season for me so far. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. While we're on the subject of the Leafs, why don't we start talking about? It's not going to happen anytime soon, but like, or you know, not particularly soon, I think. But it feels like we are in the midst of like teams are going to start buying and selling any moment, and we can start with the Leafs. Obviously, they're going to be looking for a defenseman with Jake Muzzin, maybe career ending. Question mark? Like,
yeah,
really scary stuff. You hate to see it.
The out long term will be reevaluated in February. So,
and you know,
reevaluated does,
yeah,
reevaluated does not mean teammates. Like out for 3 months. Like it means, it quite likely out for the season. But in the case of the way it works with the LTIR. The Leafs get that salary space, but it's not like regular salary space where it accumulates and sort of compounds as the season goes on. So they kind of need to know if he's coming back before they decide whether they can spend that money. Because if they spend his $5 million and then he can come back, now they're $5 million over the cap. So they probably won't go out and get a big name until they have more clarity, but certainly frees them up to be big players on something at some point if this goes the way we think it's going to.
Yeah. But anyway, the point being, they do like, as much as they don't want to go over the cap, they need defensemen in theory. But you want to know my dangerous take here?
Sure.
Is they need a fucking forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's to me, I watch these guys and I'm like, you know, obviously like Marner and Matthews are going to get their feet under them, start putting the puck in the net. They won't be like, what are they, like 23rd in goals right now? 24th maybe?
Let's see here. Yeah. Well, I mean, part of this is like everybody's been saying for years, Leafs, you're not going to win 5-1 in the playoffs. And like Sheldon Keefe.
After last night, they're up to 20th.
Sheldon Keefe has been working very hard to turn this into another 2-1 team that plays playoff style hockey. So this is sort of what you wanted to, you know, they're not going to be a top five goal scoring team because they're trying not to be.
But I think you also, even if you're in that realm, you don't want to be 20th in goals per game.
No, you don't.
You know, like you don't want to look up and be like, oh, I guess the Winnipeg Jets and like the Seattle Kraken are scoring more goals per game than we are.
That's not great. No.
No. The New York Islanders have like an extra 1/3 of a goal per game. That's not going to cut it, you know?
Nope.
And again, like Matthews and Marner are going to get going here and maybe that's enough to convince you. But like, if I'm Kyle Dubas, I'm out there looking for a forward. I get enough like, you know, B- defenseman.
Especially, C+ defenseman. Yeah. The interesting thing with the defense is, you know, they do have like Jordy Benn and guys like that hanging around, but they've also got the younger guys where it's sort of like, do you just, is this where you spend the next 2 months going, all right, you guys are going to play second pairing minutes, Sanding, Lohgren, those guys, and, you know, get some power play time and all of that. We're going to see what we really have here and then come back to it. But you're like the bottom six on the Leafs is not scary at all.
Not at all.
And that's what they've done. That's what they've had to do each year because of their cap situation is sort of put together this discount depth line or two, and it's worked. The last few years, they've been able to do it pretty well, and then this year it hasn't worked. Like nothing's really clicked. They've already waived one guy. It's a lot of it. It just isn't clicking. So they're kind of like, you know, Matthews and Marner have not been great together. They've been split up a little bit,
which is funny because Matthews and Marner are both point of game players, but you're just sitting there looking at them like, can these bums get going, please?
Exactly.
Like,
Jesus Christ. No, there's that. And then John Tavares has been very good at, you know, production wise as some of the other numbers aren't as strong, and Nylander as well, but it is sort of like, you know, the knock against the Leafs for years was like, oh yeah, but you're paying all your money to those four guys. You don't have anyone else. And it was always kind of like, yeah, but we do have other guys. Like, look at, you know, what about, and now it is starting to feel like maybe it is kind of just those four guys. Although Michael Bunton got it two goals last night. He has not been productive at all this year.
No.
And if he gets back on track, that maybe helps. But yeah, I've seen other people say that another forward might be the priority over a defenseman.
Yeah. And especially because, as you say, they're trying to play 2-1 hockey, get into the playoffs and maybe win it that way. It's like, well, no, the reason they keep losing in the playoffs is because they can't score. That's why they keep losing in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's just another reason to get another forward in the mix. But
Nick Foligno is going to be the answer again this
time. I guess the other thing to say is it seems like we're in a situation where a lot more teams are interested in buying than selling, right? As much as, I'd be willing to trade Eric Clarkson. I don't know who that is. Eric Karlsson. I'd be willing to trade Eric Karlsson. Oh, would you? You'd be willing to trade the guy who makes $11.5 million a year and has like 6 years left on that deal or whatever? That's interesting. Cool. But like, the Senators are looking for help on defense. We've heard a bunch lately, and it's like,
wait a second. The Senators, who's that guy you said the Sharks might trade?
I guess my point is really funny that the Senators, who are like tied for last in the NHL by points right now and second last in points percentage, if I'm not mistaken, are like, you know what? We need to go get some help. Fellas, the horse is out of the barn here. Season's over.
It can't be.
It has to be. Just like,
It's getting close, but it's there.
Well, no, it's the only people who should be saying it's still like the ball's still in the air or whatever are people in that front office who are trying to convince people to buy tickets for
out of the playoffs. I didn't realize it was that with games in hand.
No, anyway, they have 11. They have 11 points from 15 games.
Dom's model has them at 7% to make the playoffs.
It's over.
So what? But if they're 7% to make the playoffs, what percent are they to be in the playoff race? I won't say stay because they're not in it right now, but to be in the playoff race. That's the goal. That's what they have to do this year. They can't do another year of being last. As I put in my column today, the thing with the Senators is you could absolutely look at this team and go, hey, man, fire up the tank. Like, go out and
the
problem is Pierre Dorion is sitting there going, especially with new ownership coming in, all of this, he's sitting there going, if I tank and earn another high draft pick, I'm not the GM who's making that pick. Somebody else is going to be going up to the podium. Well, we take Connor Bedard and, everyone cheers and I'm going to be sitting at home unemployed because it's now been 6 years in a row that my team stunk.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, but that's what I'm saying. Like the only people who are like, it's just a little airborne. It's still good. It's still good.
Yeah.
Is like the Pierre Dorion, like people who have a vested interest in the Ottawa Senators being vaguely competitive. Like, sure. I guess the question is, what do you mean by being playoff competitive? Like, do you think they could end up 7 points out or whatever?
They play games in March that matter.
I think there's an almost zero, like a maybe not 7%, but like 12% chance of that. Like, they look horrible. Full stop.
They've looked, their record looks horrible. The underlying numbers suggest that they have been much closer to break-even team.
So, sure, but they don't have any talent on defense, really, especially with Shabbat out long-term. Yes. Well, potentially long-term.
Potentially. It's a week. But yeah.
And the other thing is they don't have anybody in goal where you're like, oh, they could absolutely trade it around or turn it around and get elite goaltending all of a sudden,
not elite, but Cam Talbot hasn't played much this year because he was hurt, so I mean that is,
yeah, but it's Cam Talbot.
Yeah, no, it is.
Like, that's my point is, what did we say? I don't think anybody thought they'd be this bad, but what did we say going into the year? They're gonna have to win a lot of 5-4 games. And maybe if DeBrincat doesn't start slow or whatever. We're talking about a different situation, but he did start slow. And now they have a 7.7% chance to make the playoffs. And I just kind of look at it and go, this is a tough one for me.
It is tough. I just don't see how they can throw in the towel. Speaking for Pierre Dorion, and would you do it if you're Pierre Dorion and you're getting fired if they finish last?
I mean,
what do you?
He might get fired anyway the way they're playing.
Yeah. It's a tough sell, man. Team has been done by the end of November years in a row now. And this was the year again, mm-hmm. like they're out there, they're selling mm-hmm. the tickets. They get DeBrincat, they get Claude Giroux to come home. There's finally optimism for the first time in forever to throw in the towel. And
they go 5-9-1 in their first 15 games.
But to throw in the towel on a team that is, you know, again, playing better than their record would indicate. Oh man, that's just I see where you're coming from. If I was simming this out as a computer, I would absolutely be like, hey, of course, tank. But this is, you know, is it real life and you gotta like keep the fan base engaged and all this. I don't know. Find out what Ryan Reynolds thinks. Let's check with Deadpool and see.
I believe Pierre Dorion said he met Ryan Reynolds the other day and he was like, it was nice.
For him, yeah, it was probably very cool for Ryan Reynolds to meet. he probably walked up and hugged him.
Wow, the Pierre Dorion. That's great.
That's awesome.
I guess my point is that, like, for all the stuff about, oh, look at how tanking has worked out for so and so. Look at how tanking's worked out.
The Sabres would be the cautionary.
The Sabres, the Coyotes, whoever. Look how tanking worked out for the 10-0 in their last 10 games, New Jersey Devils. Look how tanking worked out for the Tampa Bay Lightning a decade and a half ago or whatever it was. Look how tanking mm-hmm. worked out for the Colorado Avalanche. You know? Like, you don't...
You absolutely... Tank season is here. It really is. I just think there's going to be a lot of teams more motivated than the Senators would be. And I had like, I put my list out this morning of like, here's the first snapshot of, I think I'd had a dozen teams. You know, who's in surprisingly great shape is Anaheim, because they stink. Their goaltending stinks,
mm-hmm.
but they can't really fix it because they're spending a bunch on it. They're rebuilding. They got a new GM. So, I mean, it's not, none of that Dorion stuff applies there. Like they would happily like pull the chute, and they have a coach who, I mean, I think Dallas Eakin should be a good NHL coach, but he doesn't seem to be. Keep that all in play, man. They're in good shape too. And then, I mean, they'd have pretty talent packed, roster going forward.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the other one, obviously, is Columbus with Werenski.
Yeah, I wanted to say real quick about the Ducks. Someone posted this on Twitter last night. I don't remember who it was. Did you know the Ducks do not have a regulation win through 16 games?
I did not know that.
All five of their wins in overtime or the shootout.
Oof. So that's the one thing you got to say if you're a tanking team. Stay out of the overtime. Got to knock that off.
100%.
San Jose is the same thing. San Jose stinks, but they go to overtime every night. Dude, knock it off, guys. Bad habit. Like, let's that all those 3-point games will add up. You gotta be careful on that. But oh my god, like Anaheim is getting lit. They've given up 70 goals in 16 games. Like that's 1980s stuff.
Yeah,
that's over crazy. 4 goals a game. That's crazy. Call me crazy, but I think maybe John Gibson isn't good anymore. I think maybe he's not going to rediscover that Vezina form from like 2015 or whatever it was that we keep waiting for him to get back to.
That does feel like kind of a safe bet, doesn't it?
I'm starting to,
interesting.
Still can't wait till some team trades for him.
It's going to happen.
Probably going to be the Leafs.
Yeah, another position they need to upgrade for sure. So yeah, I guess The other team to talk about here is, does it feel like Vancouver's, we'll talk about the Canucks again on the other side of a break here, but does it feel like Vancouver is going to do absolutely anything at all? I don't know.
They, as far as...
As far as like with their roster.
Yeah. Thomas Drantz wrote a good piece where he is basically saying it should be a everything's on the table rebuild.
Totally like, agree.
No untouchables. Peterson, Quinn Hughes, Demko, go down the list. Everybody should be available and you just scrap it and start over. But
yep.
Everybody seems to believe that there is less than zero appetite from ownership in Vancouver to do that.
Yeah. And I guess that's the other thing to say about the Senators is, you know, like I think we've seen it before that there is more appetite than people would think to accept a tank, especially this year.
Yeah. But the ownership thing in Ottawa does kind of hang over it too, because
absolutely. You know,
I'd be willing to bet new ownership would love to come in and have Connor Bedard sitting there or, you know, any of the guys at the top of the draft. But there's also the part where current owners might be going to Pierre Dorion and going, dude, you're costing us money by this team stinking because, you know, we missed playoffs again. Like this is, the price is going down every time we sit down to negotiate a price for this team. And they're like, it says here that you guys are the joke of the league. You know, it's, you know, get us into the playoffs, buddy. And then, I don't know. Jacob Chychrun.
I get what you're saying, obviously. Yeah.
Chychrun's apparently back this week. So as far as the selling, that's,
we're getting closer on that one too.
Yeah.
And that feels like assumed, it's got to happen.
You would think, but you would assume teams are probably going to want to see him first.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Because for a long time, it's been, you like Chychrun's been mentioned with Ottawa and I'm sure other teams. And you kind of say, well, yeah, but he's out. So it's, if you need help right now, that's not the deal to make. And in a week or two, it could be.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I look at everything that's going on in the league, and it just does kind of feel like okay, we're gonna be in a situation where at some point somebody has to make the first like serious trade, and I don't know, like I guess my point is you could tell me any team would make like the big trade, you know, like right now. That feels extremely convincing to me.
And it's going to be, I know we always say this, right? I mean, we're always like, oh, the dominoes are going to start falling. And it never really happens. But again, this year is unique. You've got those two, you know, poles of the league both pulling where, you know, yeah, if you're in second place in your division and the first place team makes a big trade and gets better, you're sitting there going, well, do we got to get better to keep up? But also, if you're at the bottom of the league and some team trades away guys and gets worse, are you sitting there going, you know what, we got to move our guys too because we don't. I don't know, man. Chicago to me remains very, very interesting because their record is not great. I mean, they've won 6 out of 15 games, but they're fake 500. And you just wonder how that's like Kyle Davidson's got to be sitting there like, come on, guys. Like,
what do I got to do here?
Let's go. Let's get the plan, man. Like, he's calling Luke Richardson into his office like, hey, dude.
Yeah, Jonathan Toews is having a nice season. He's like, I guess that's good for his trade value at the deadline.
But, you know, like, if right now, if he goes to, like, Patrick Kane and he's like, you know, I got to do it. Kane's like, we're 1 point out of the playoffs. We're 500. Anywhere, man. We can do this. Come on.
Anyway. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll be right back to talk about some other stuff. All right. Back in a minute.
It is that time of year again. We just got a bunch of snow dumped on us. I got the lights up. It is officially holiday time, which of course means holiday shopping and Black Friday and all of that fun stuff. And right now, Brooklinen has you covered and accessorized and super cozy because right now all their home essentials are on sale for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Brooklinen is known for sheets that literally win awards, and the hits for home keep on coming. Their luxe satin sheets continue to be a favorite for their buttery smooth finish and perfect temperature for those who sleep a little chilly. Their weighted blankets are like wrapping up in a hug whenever you need. It's the perfect size to bring comfort to any corner of your space and just the right weight to put your mind and body at ease. And this Black Friday, Cyber Monday is the perfect time to commit to the comfort you're craving or gifting, because every bit of it is on sale. So make your holidays even happier with help from the internet's favorite, Brooklinen. Brooklinen's Black Friday Cyber Monday sale is only for a limited time, and the deals do not get better. If you happen to have missed out, use the promo code PUCK. Visit brooklinen.com and get $20 off plus free shipping on orders $100 or more with the code PUCK. That's brooklinen.com, promo code PUCK.
All right, we're back. And hey, speaking of teams that are bad or whatever, feels like we're in real shit or get off the pot territory with the old Vancouver Canucks.
Yes.
I don't know.
That was me pausing and muting while I coughed for anybody wondering.
Oh, okay.
It was not that. I just want to make clear that I didn't have to stop and think about whether the Canucks are in bad shape.
Wait a minute. Let's really think about this. It's crazy. Like, they won last night, but I can't remember if it was like Elliot mentioned this or something like that, but they didn't really want to make the decision to fire the coach around the time they had three guys going into the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that all is over now. And then they won last night, so maybe, I don't know, that buys them like a little bit of a reprieve, but I don't.
You know what I think would help would be like Jim Rutherford going on another radio show and just shiving his coach and his team and everybody and talking about how much they all stink.
And by the way, they beat the Sabres, who I believe have now lost six in a row.
Dude, I really thought this time the Sabres' good start was for real. I thought
Lucy was going to hold the football the whole really time did. For me.
Yep. Yeah, the Vancouver's bad. And Jim Rutherford clearly hates Bruce Boudreau more than anybody hates anyone. I guess the only question is, and to link back to what we were saying before the break, like, if you're the Canucks, have you already shifted to tank mode? And if you're in tank mode and you think your coach stinks, does that mean you keep the coach and let him screw up the whole season? But I heard, I guess it was Elliot saying, like, he's like, you never want to say that anything is imminent, but he's like, it feels like something is imminent here. So
yeah, and especially because I think I saw a headline either yesterday or maybe even this morning. It's crazy. You see so much stupid shit online that, like, just, you never know where it came from. You never know where it like how real it is or any of that kind of stuff. But anyway, I think I saw something online where it said something along the lines of, there are people in the Canucks front office who are worried about the long-term effects on younger players or developing players or that kind of thing if they keep playing like this, yes, with the implication being playing under this coach.
Yeah, and that's always it, right? Like, anytime you look at a younger team, we've talked about some of them, and you're like, oh, just tank. And it's like, yeah, but at some point, especially if you do it for years, are you screwing up the young guys you already have?
Yeah.
You know,
like, it's a totally reasonable thing to wonder about, for sure.
Now, in Vancouver's case,
look at the Buffalo Sabres, right? Like, it's that simple.
But the counter to that would be, like, in Vancouver's case, who are you worried about that wouldn't be part of a teardown necessarily? I mean,
right.
You know, Hughes, I guess, would be a guy you put there. Like, even Elias Pettersson's almost 25. Like, it's not, yeah, if you're going to do, this is where I'm taking your shtick here, kind of. But
I was just going to say, the people who were always mad at me for saying, like, guys are too old, you should move on from them. Now it's Sean's turn.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely not a team that has a bunch of young talent. And when I say young, I mean young in the sense of going to get much better than they are now.
Yeah, and they don't have a strong pipeline either. Like, it's I think it's kind of like lower middle of the pack, if I am remembering right. But it's a tough sell for me to be like, oh, you know, 2 years from now, the Canucks can be in really good shape, you know?
They have currently, I'm counting, 1, 2, 3 forwards on their team that are 22 or younger only. And those three forwards have combined to score 2 goals on the season.
Yeah. EP Ringside ranked the Canucks going into this season at 28th in their prospect pool ranking. Oof. So no bad, just plain old bad.
Okay.
Sorry
we got your hopes up with middle of the pack there.
And Jonathan Lekkerimaki has been like famously healthy, scratched a bunch of times in his like Swedish league team. And another guy that people seem to really like is Aiden McDonough. And that's a guy who I've seen that guy play a bunch because he plays in Boston. He plays for Northeastern. And the skating's going to be a problem with that kid is what everybody kind of agrees. And so, you know, I guess it wouldn't be a surprise. It would be a bit of a surprise for me if that kid actually, he's a really gifted goal scorer and that kind of thing. But I think that skating is going to hold him back at the next level. And so like, if those are your two big, prospects right now, there's a much bigger problem going on, you know?
Yep. So yeah, again, it kind of gets to, I can honestly see two lanes that you could take here. Number one is you say, we've got Pettersson, we've got Hughes, we've got Demko, who I think is 27, which is not young, but for a goaltender, you know, the aging curve isn't.
It's fine.
You know, it's the guy, he can easily be your goalie for the next 5 years. You say, we've got one guy at each position to build around. So, yeah, you know, maybe you move Bo Horvat, but, you know, since you haven't extended him, you know, Brock Besser's still only 25. I don't know if you can move JT Miller after you just signed him. You know, maybe you just have to eat that for a little while. Ekman Larson's top. But, you know, there's guys that you move the guys around that, see if you can find someone who wants Tyler Myers, all of that. But you keep the young core in place and you try to build around that, which means it's not really a full-scale rebuild. It's a reload. And then the other one is you say, no, this team stinks. That they have been bad with this core. You trade those guys because, you know,
they have value.
The list I just gave of guys not to trade, other than Horvat, like who's left that you're going to get value for? No one's giving you a first round pick for Luke Shen. Like I just described a rebuild that would get you a bunch of fourth round draft picks, and you got to be more aggressive than that. So you move the guys who have high value and you start over. And, I can see both arguments. I'm just wondering, like, Jim Rutherford in his 70s, did he come to Vancouver to oversee a patient rebuild? And would the owner even let him do that? I guess is much more where we got to start.
Yeah, and I like Drantz has reported a couple of times now. There are people in that front office who are like, we need a rebuild. And you wonder how much their voices are being heard or whatever, you know, but,
and like, I get why Jim Benning in the last few years couldn't sell that to ownership, because it's hard as a GM. If you've been there for 5 years to go to your owner and go, we stink, it's all screwed up. We got to start over. And
you're effectively saying, please fire.
Yeah. I mean, the owner is going to be sitting there going, why would I let you be the one to start over? Now they've got a new front office in place. So in theory, that makes it easier to sell. But is that front office in place because the owner wanted people who would tell him we're going to be okay, and now they have to keep that up? I don't know. We don't know what that dynamic is, but
I feel like we can guess, right?
Yeah. The other thing that's worth mentioning is there are different fan bases that are at different stages of acceptance. And I feel like Vancouver right now, the blow this team sky high,
whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you took a typical Canucks fan and you're like, what do you want to do with this team? They'd be like, blow it up forever. Just, you know, absolutely take it apart. And then if you specifically went to guys and went like, so you're saying trade Peterson, they'd be like, ah, I don't know. You're saying trade Quinn Hughes? Ooh, I don't know about that. And maybe wind up back where you started. But I don't feel like there's a lot of love for this iteration of the Canucks, let's just say.
And I think that's well earned, if we're being honest. You know, like they you can't say they haven't put in the work. But I guess my point is in all this, like that it all circles back to the number of people who got fooled, the number of people like in this league, fan bases, whatever, who got fooled by a fake playoff, like the fakest playoff of all time.
Yeah,
you know, like the Canucks certainly aren't the only one.
It is, it's tough though. I got to say this as someone who, like, I've been fooled by this team because I keep looking at it and maybe not so much now, but like a couple years ago, you looked at Pettersson and said, like, this is a foundational
franchise. I thought Pettersson was going to be like one of the best. I think at some point I said, like, I think he has the potential to be the best player in Canada.
Yeah. Quinn
and
Hughes
then McDavid
was,
went insane the next full two seasons and Pettersson like took a big step back for one of them and kind of never got back.
Quinn Hughes a couple years ago, it was Hughes and Makar was like the Coke and Pepsi debate in their Calder year. Demko as of last year would look like one of the great, again, youngish.
That was why I thought they would be playoff competitive. Like I said it at the time, but like, you know, they got to where they were last year with elite goaltending. And I figured, you know, a full season of Bruce Boudreau plus elite goaltending or close to it would equal playoff competitive, at least, especially in that division where I think there's a good amount of reason to be like, oh, you know, there are spots open for sure.
You know,
and then, yeah, here we are.
But so, was it 5 years ago? Brock Besser comes in, scores 30 goals as a rookie. And, you know, this is what makes it so tough because, you know, you're looking at a guy like that and you're going, well, 30 goals as a rookie. Okay, so we pencil him for what, 40 within a couple of years? Maybe he's 50 someday. Yep. And it's always like, yeah, but what if he's just, what if he never reaches that level again, which he hasn't? Not that he's bad, but he, you know, he hasn't got there. I don't know, man. That's a fascinating
thing.
That
J.P. Miller contract looks so bad now.
It looks awful from... Like, so often we look at contracts and we say, like, okay, yes, you want to keep the player, of course, but the number was wrong or the years, it was too many years or the structure or whatever. Like, that one, it's just, like, the decision to even do the contract feels disastrous now.
Yep.
When they could be sitting here with no extension in place and everyone's talking, and, you know, you've got a great trade trip now as the season goes off the rails, like,
yeah,
man. GMs have got to, front offices, ownership, whoever's making the call. They've got to develop the nerve to let guys go into a season. I can't remember. Did Miller play the? Did he play I'm not going to negotiate during the season card?
I'm not going to remember that. But I just, you know, again, like they bought him at the absolute highest cost they could have. They were like, oh, he's coming off a 99 point season. We better give him all the money, like, you know, completely, not completely out of the blue. He's been a good player for a long time, but out of the blue enough where it's like, do you think this is like something he can replicate? Like, I don't understand the thought process.
Yeah.
But it seems like they did think that. Yes.
They are a very interesting team to me to watch. And I'm glad that I am saying that not as a fan, but as a neutral observer.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. I look again, like, you know, if there was a year to convince your owner who doesn't want to tank that tanking is the right thing to do, this is it. Because it's as much as we say this is the Connor Bedard draft, this is a draft where, like, especially up front, like the level of talent in this draft is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Top like 8 picks, top 10 picks. Like, these are guys who are going to be difference makers for you.
And again, I just circle back to, you know, if I'm the Canucks front office and the owner calls me in and says, you have permission to tank, but don't trade Pettersson, Hughes, Demko, Besser. Like, what cards do I have? I mean, I could trade Horvat.
I think you would have to trade Horvat at this point.
And my only other card realistically that I can play, assuming that you can't trade Miller, is bad coaching. And if I clearly Rutherford already thinks he has bad coaching, does that in a weird way, like, is Bruce Boudreau bad enough to be safe all year because he's the key to
I don't think so. I think the second they lose two games in a row again, that's it. The horse is out of the barn on this season. It's donezo for them. I guess in theory they could do what they did last year and play at like 100 and something point pace. And that's what's fucking crazy about keeping Boudreau to me is we spent a good chunk of last year going, oh, it seems like they're making this decision a little late. And they play at a pace just good enough where they play at like 108 point pace or something. And you're like, oh, if they had done this like a week earlier, we're not having this conversation.
Yep.
But they didn't do that instead.
They did not.
Oops. A classic whoopsie daisy from the Vancouver Canucks who, feels like they're about to make another classic whoopsie daisy with whatever they decide to do. Oh, well, that's life, I guess. One other thing I wanted to talk about here is, speaking of teams that are maybe worse than everybody thought they would be, the Penguins and the Capitals.
Yeah.
They're not Columbus bad, but they're both below 500 at this point. And what do you do if you're those teams? Like, yeah, injuries are a problem in Washington, obviously. But injuries aren't the problem in Pittsburgh at all. I don't think they have anybody hurt right now.
Yeah, the
certainly
Penguins
anybody
are...
that you would move that would be like, oh, damn, can't miss that guy.
Yeah.
Nick Backstrom's on that list.
I'm looking at their the Penguins page. They their injury list is Pierre Olivier Joseph. So yeah, that's not.
That's the only guy is P.O. Joseph.
Yeah, that's been out. So man, I feel like the Penguins are a tougher call because they flat out re-upped on this entire core in the offseason. Like, they had the chance, and obviously, you know, I say they had the chance to move on. They wouldn't, if Letang and or Malkin leave as free agents, you're not getting anything in exchange. But
you're
this is
the cap space, I
old
guess.
Team. Man, this they is an old, old team. They yep. have one guy in their top 10 scoring who's 27 or under, and that's Danton Heinen, who is 10th. The age of their top 10 scores, 35, 36, 31, 28, 29, 30, 38, 35.
God, Jake Gensel's already 28, huh?
And then Jeff Petrie's next. Like, this is a – man, there's a lot of 30-something-year-old guys on this team. And this, again, this is a team – bad farm system. I don't know where you guys have them, but
– I can tell you in 2 seconds. But, yeah, not high at all. I think probably going to be pretty close to last.
And I mean, they've been going for it for years. I
27th, yeah.
You know, I'm not, you know, you trade a
they
lot
should,
of picks.
They're a team that should be last. This isn't like the Canucks where it's like, oh, we finished like sixth from the bottom of the league, like 10 years in a row. The Penguins have been consistently good for like a decade.
Yeah. You have
decade plus, whatever.
You have 1/2 generational franchise players. You've won 3 cups. You want to wring as many drops out of that as you can. You keep going for it, for sure. But
absolutely.
And now that it's caught up with you, I'm not sure Pittsburgh can do anything other than, you know, save. If this is the year we got to pay the Piper, go ahead. And then the league will rig the lottery. And
they
get,
yeah,
Connor,
they
Bedard.
Get Connor Bedard. Yeah.
And everybody will be totally fine with that. It's that'll be
nobody would freak out about that at all.
Very pleasant day to be a hockey fan. Everyone will be cool. Washington's a bit tougher because at least they're, you can point to Backstrom and say, like, we don't, you know, that's.
Well, it's not just Backstrom. Wilson.
Yeah.
I think John Carlson missed some time earlier this year. Connor Brown, like, I think they said he might be done for the season. Maybe I'm getting that wrong. But TJ Oshie's hurt right now. Like, basically all their players who are all the big forwards who aren't Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Stroman, Mantha, mm-hmm. not healthy at all. And Mantha hasn't even been that good this year. So I said it before. I got yelled at for saying it, but just arranging the entire organization to get Alex Ovechkin the goal record. That should be the goal.
But here. I mean, with Washington, can't we at least say that, like, I mean, they've been bad, but
that's right.
That we, with all the injuries, that, you know, maybe we don't know if this is a bad team or if this is, you know, Darcy Kemper's been fine. They went and addressed that. They just don't have anyone, like, any skaters to. You could make the case that, like, their second, third, and fourth most important skaters are all out right now.
Sure.
Versus Pittsburgh, where,
everybody's healthy.
To double back on Pittsburgh, and this is kind of, you know, because with Washington, there's been some Peter Laviolette talk. Like, when I was with Pittsburgh, and I was saying, like, what can you do? Is a coaching change something you look at there? Like,
yeah, I mean, we talked about that last week.
Feels like that's the only card, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I don't know what, and I don't know what it accomplishes. You know, like, again,
makes you worse, kinda, probably.
And
it makes Mike Sullivan like immediately the number one coach probably on the market, maybe other than Barry Trotz.
But like, do we feel like with a coaching change, and they're obviously not going to get Barry Trotz. Like, do we feel like with a coaching change, the Capitals are going to go on a big run and become playoff competitive again? Again, they're below 500.
I mean, you know, Laviolette, like, is one of those guys where he's a very good coach who seems to top out after about 4 years. Yeah. He seems to have a shelf life. So maybe, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, they are, what, 3 points out of a playoff spot right now. So, I mean, you know, go on a run. They don't have to go on that much of a run. Now, games played and everything, the situation is worse than it sounds.
Yes.
But I don't think they're that. Yeah, put it this way. I think if you believe that you can upgrade the coaching, then yes, I think if you make a move now, you have time to get back in this race. And, you know, as guys get back healthy as well, to expect to get better. That might be what they have to end up doing there.
Yeah. Again, it just feels a little far-fetched for me.
Yeah.
You know, like they were good last year, but like, they weren't like, oh man, look out for the Capitals. They got to 100. They got to 100 points. Can't say they didn't. But yeah, it's just a little bit of a tough sell for me. Like, oh, the Capitals are going to be able to figure this out. Because, you know, some of these guys are going to come back from injury soon. Others, you know, like Nick Backstrom, like, who knows?
Yeah, Backstrom, we don't even know if he's going to play this year.
Yeah.
So that's fair.
And again, like, we keep saying it. This is the year to be bad in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, yeah, you're only going to get a 8% chance of winning the draft lottery or whatever. That's fine, because as long as you end up in the top even five, you're going to get a very, very good player who maybe can even help you, like, next year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just...
It's tough, but it's fascinating because, I mean, Pittsburgh, Washington, state the obvious, those are two playoff teams last year. In that group of 100-point teams where we were like, oh, man, like, who's going to drop out? Well, right now it looks like both of those teams are going to drop out and leave the door open in the Metro. And
Washington and always felt like the candidate for me.
Yeah.
But I think I would have erred on the side of like, yeah, but they'll still probably make it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Anyway, Sean, hey, now that we've talked about all these bad teams, do you want to talk about, you have an article coming up?
This was the piece that you already mentioned today with the introduction of the tank index. I've done this a few years over the years where I take a look at, okay, which team is in the best position of the bad teams, who's in the best position to tank, which is to say, who's in the best position to strategically decide to get worse and be worse for the rest of the year. And usually I do it in the second half of the season, But I figured this year, because the top of the draft is so loaded and because the value of finishing dead last with those three franchise guys and guaranteed a top three pick is so high, I'm going to kind of do it a few times over the year. So I did my first one, and it's interesting. It's because at the beginning of the year, we all said, okay, Chicago and Arizona clearly are just openly tanking. And both of those teams have been okay. Not great, but okay. It was a bit of a surprise. I had Anaheim ranked very high, and then Columbus is the other obvious one. Yeah. Off to a terrible start. Wouldn't necessarily have put them on the list at the beginning of the year because they just gone and got Gaudreau and all of that. Mm-hmm. The goaltending stinks even before they have the injuries problems. But that is a team where, to me, like, one of the things, you know, tanking is, it's tough to do psychologically. And you either have to be like Chicago or Arizona and just bite the bullet and say, we don't care, we'll be open about it. Or sometimes it's tough to make that switch. You need something to point to and say, well, this is the moment that we had no choice. Zach Werenski going out potentially for the season is one of those moments, I think, for Columbus, yep. where they could just say to their fans, hey, we lost our not best player, but absolute key player, captain, all of that.
Best defenseman by far.
Oh, by mile. So, I think Columbus is in very good shape to do. And you know what? That's a team, like, who's been the best player in Columbus franchise history? Like, probably still Rick Nash to this day. They need a superstar. Rick Nash was a superstar in the league for a few years, but, I mean, he didn't. I think those are the teams that are interesting. I didn't have Ottawa ranked all that high. Montreal's another one that's fat because, like, they have been legitimately okay this year.
Yep.
Like, not even fake 500. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had Columbus, Anaheim top two. I think I had Arizona next. Like, is there anyone that you look at it and go, this is the team that can really stink it up more than they are now and make that move?
If we're leaving aside, of course, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right. They are terrible. Worst 100-point pace team in history.
I think you pretty much nailed it. The Sabres aren't going to be bad and aren't going to be able to get bad enough, as much as I don't trust their goaltending at all. And obviously, again, they're on a six-game losing
streak. I look at that. I have goaltending as a separate category in this because it's so important to me. Buffalo has two goalies. One of them's bad and one of them's 41. So
and not good.
Yeah. I think I said in the piece that, but Craig Anderson has been good this year, which is
like, broadly speaking, the last few years, you would say Craig Anderson
correct
to finish.
Yes.
And he's been good so far.
So I think the way I phrased it in the piece was, I don't think Kevin Adams, given how bad this team has been for so long and how they've shown some signs of life, I don't think he wants to yank the steering wheel into the last place lane again. But if the vehicle is drifting in that direction, I think he goes kind of hands off and says, exactly, 100%.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I guess I could see Arizona kind of ending up there. Their underlying numbers are horrendous.
Yeah.
And you know, they're really just getting bailed out by shooting percentage and save percentage right now.
Right.
But with that
save percentage by their goaltenders, who I definitely know and definitely would not.
Carol Vemelka? Carol Vemelka was like fine-ish last year, given what he was playing in front of or behind. I mean, you know. Mm. So I don't know. That's a goalie. I think if he was on a better team, I think we'd. And you know, this is a classic fallacy, I guess, too, of like, you know, if he was on a better team, he'd actually be like the best goalie in the world or whatever. Obviously, I don't think that, but like, you know, you hear that just often enough that it's like, okay, let's not get into all that, right? But anyway, I actually do kind of like Carol Vemelka. I just, you know,
the thing with Arizona is other than Jacob Chychrun, who again hasn't played this year, like, who are they going to trade that's going to make them worse? Like, I don't think you're trading Clayton Keller, but maybe you are. But
that would be like the one big name guy.
Whereas you know who is interesting is from a tank perspective, because I don't think they're there yet. But if St. Louis were to decide, you know what, this isn't our year, let's head for the bottom. They've got Tarasenko and Ryan O'Reilly on expiring contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Both of whom, first of all, you could get some solid assets back, but you trade both those guys, you made your team a lot worse.
For sure. However, they are like winning a lot again now.
They've won three in a row. So maybe this is
and beating good teams to do it too. Like they beat Colorado the other. I watched that game. It was awesome. It was a really good game. Their last two wins were against Vegas and Colorado on the road.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So as much as if they wanted to hollow out this team, they could, I think, do it pretty quickly and easily.
Mm-hmm.
But you do kind of wonder, like, how bad could they realistically get with, you know, I don't think we're looking at Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas and going, oh yeah, they're going to stink all year.
Not necessarily. You know? Again, like, they've won three in a row, but they're 1 point out of dead last in the league.
Which I understand.
Again, it gets to the point of, in this league, man, it's hard to gain ground because you just, the stupid loser point.
Well, I think conversely, it would be difficult for them to lose additional ground.
Unless they trade those two key guys.
No, I'm saying even if they do trade those guys.
Yeah.
I think they have just enough talent that you would be like, oh, you know, what are we really pursuing here?
All
like,
right. Fair enough.
Eighth bottom or whatever, like, feels maybe the most realistic for them. I don't know. Anyway. I guess the other thing we should very quickly touch on before we get to a quick quiz for Sean here is the Boston Bruins have announced that they are launching an internal investigation into what happened with the whole Mitchell Miller thing. And a lot of people posted the fucking hot dog man.
Guy, yep.
Mm-hmm. We're all trying. Yeah. But the thing that immediately occurred to me in looking at this is, oh, they're using this as like a pretext to fire someone or force a resignation or something like that.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me, because, okay, they're going to make the results public. But like this comes, you know, a week, they announced this a week after Cam Neely said, I'm going to take a week and see if I need to dole out any like additional discipline to, you know, and people who made this decision.
This is probably the right thing to do, because there are like, you know, no one's going to trust Cam Neely to go out and figure this out on his own. And if he comes back and says, yeah, you know,
I'm actually very innocent.
Yeah. Then so, but it's, I mean, and again, like this would be, this dynamic, I think, would be playing out very differently if this wasn't the first place overall team in the NHL right now.
Yeah, maybe. You
know? Now, not that protects me. I mean, remember, the Panthers were 7-0 when Joel Quenneville went last year. So it doesn't protect you entirely, but it'll be interesting to see what they find.
Yeah, I think... I said it last week. Like, I think at some point, does not the buck stop with the general manager, who is the guy who ultimately signs off on every personnel decision? Like,
you would think
the idea that some other person made this decision.
You would think, except again, like the way that Sweeney, like at that, oh, I don't know, like media availability, I guess, not a press conference, but where he kept saying, like, I don't know that this is the right deal.
Right.
You know, if he got overruled, then, but.
At that point, it's just Cam Neely's fault.
Yeah.
Because who's going to overrule him otherwise?
Yeah. You're right. Like to fire the scout who suggested the idea would be garbage.
Yeah, I said it last week. Scout's job is to be like, oh, I think this player can play.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like, there shouldn't have been any, because sometimes the scouts like will go, oh, I think this player can play, but he's a shithead. So maybe don't, you know, I don't think there's any way you can look at this and say, oh, I didn't think this player was a shithead. Really? You didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay.
Yep.
So that and, that's kind of where I'm at with yeah. this investigation.
And they're continuing, meanwhile, to try to figure out how to get out of the contract and all of that stuff.
Yeah. I think this is just like they need a kind of like legal pretext to make this official. And once they have it, they're going to make it official about somebody's going to lose their job about over this.
Yeah. And then I guess the other thing is the GM meetings, and we don't really have news to talk about there because
which is why I didn't even write it down.
Yeah. The GMs got together and decided everything's great. League's hitting on all cylinders, and there were a couple of discussions about tweaking some rules. The one that made me laugh was the apparently one of the GMs made a pitch that they should remove the minor penalty for being wrong on a challenge, which I love the idea that a month into this season, somebody was like, we need more challenges.
We got to fix the review system. It's too good.
Yeah. The problem with the review system is there's not enough reviews and coaches aren't challenging enough.
We need to incentivize coaches to look into this.
Yeah. And so luckily that got shot down apparently, but there's some talk about being able to review. Like we had another one of those high sticks last night where it wasn't a high stick, but
yeah.
They can't review it, but they could have reviewed it if it was a double minor, but because it was a minor, I mean, that's probably not great, but those situations don't come up all that much. That was pretty much it. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of big changes coming. Let's just
say. Everything's great. We've got it all figured out. We're the National Hockey League. Everybody thinks we're doing a good job.
That's it.
All right. The quick quiz this week is in honor of John Tavares scoring his 400th career goal. Somebody tweeted out, again, don't remember who, but somebody tweeted out he's the 13th active player to have 300 career goals, which felt a little high to me, honestly. I was like, okay. Oh, feels like a lot, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, how many of the other 13 or other 12 can you name?
Okay. Crosby and Ovechkin, obviously.
You got it. That's two.
The other obvious one, because he just did it, is Kessel.
That's right.
Now, from there.
There's another guy who I believe in the first game of this season scored his 408th goal. He's up to 408, I should say. Scored his 400th goal. Okay. I think it happened earlier this season. It might have been very end of last season, but it was recent.
All right. I'm going to go down. Just old guys who score a lot of goals. Malkin.
Malkin is on there. That's not. He's at 451, so he's well past that.
Okay. Is Jeff Carter on the list?
Jeff Carter is on the list. He's at 420.
Okay.
And I'm not going to do any jokes about that.
Nope. Okay. Oh, I was going to say Taves. Taves, don't no. think, but Kane Taves would not be there, right?
Patrick Kane is there. Taves is not.
Okay, and then right. So I was like, has Brad Marchand got there?
No.
Bergeron, though, would.
Bergeron is the guy who is at 408 now.
Okay. Thinking old guys. Pavelski?
Pavelski's at 429.
Okay.
There are, I think, three that you haven't gotten.
I guess we're back to Eric Staal being an active player.
He is, yeah, he's over 400, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Kopitar?
No. I'll look up Kopitar real quick, but you name another guy, but he is not at 400.
I'm starting to do that, like going through.
Kopitar's at 368.
Okay.
Feels like it's going to be a tough lift for him to get to.
Not this year, but he'll get there. Oh, Stamkos.
Steven Stamkos, 488, recently reached 500 career assists. And had a funny quote about people say I'm a goal scorer, but I got to the assist first. So what do they know?
Very nice. Okay. Yeah, that's funny. I was going through like old guys, but so Stamkos is 480, is there anyone else like other than Crosby, Ovechkin?
That's... One other guy is maybe a little obvious, maybe. But
how many more guys do I need?
You're never going to get. Okay. The second to last. There's two guys left.
Okay.
One is at 407. One is at 413.
And these are both like real active guys, not just like haven't mm-hmm. retired yet. Okay.
One of them, I was like, oh, I guess he is still playing.
Oh, boy.
I'll put it that way for you.
They've got to be old guy, like old guys.
They're
who
both.
Don't score
they're both.
That
I
much.
Believe both 03 draft.
Okay. 03 draft. Oh, Corey Perry, probably.
Corey Perry is 407. Now, the guy at 413, I would be absolutely shocked if you pulled.
Well, I'm going through the
blew my mind.
2003. So most of those guys are gone.
Yep.
It's not Brent Burns, right? Like he's
no. He probably he might be around 200 though, Brent Burns.
Yeah,
but obviously that's. No. Brent Burns has scored 230 career goals.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I feel like there's another guy because like Getzlaf obviously was in that
draft. One more guy.
And
again, like I had to look up that he was still active, but he's actually having like a half-decent season for himself at age 38.
Is it Zach Parise?
It is. 413.
See, there's no way I would have got that without the 2003 hint. Yeah. And then I almost said, when you said like I had to look up that he was still active and he's old, I was going to make a joke like it's got to be an Islander. And then I was like, wait a second.
Hey, I know a guy on the Islanders. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah,
Parise. Yes. I would have never. Yeah. Honestly, again, if with no clues, I would have been sitting here for a long time and I probably would have cycled past the Islanders in my head a few times without even thinking that Zach Parise was there. I just, wow. Yeah.
So there you go.
Who's the next guy? Like the next guy to get there? Is there anyone at like 390?
Let me pull that up. I did not write that down, but that is something I can easily look at. The next closest guy is Anze Kopitar at 368. Okay. So he's going to score 32 more goals to get there. Jonathan Toews right behind him at 364. Brad Marchand at 356. Nobody else over 350. And I would say the only guy who has like a decent shot of getting to 350 right now for sure is Jamie Benn at 335. Beyond him is Pacioretty. And after that is Tyler Seguin. Pacioretty is 323, so he'd need another 37 goals. And Tyler Seguin only has 308.
Hmm. Okay.
So. And most of the other guys who are like over 300 are old. So yeah. Like Jeff Skinner, Claude Giroux, Logan Couture, et cetera.
I don't know why, but hearing Logan
Austin
Couture
Matthews
accurately.
Austin Matthews at 266.
Okay. So that may be, yeah. Here and McDavid might get there this year the way he's going.
Yeah, no shit.
Hearing Logan Couture accurately described as old.
He's old.
Just hit me in a, I don't disagree, but oof.
Joe Pavelski was the guy for a very long time it was like, oh, he's not that old. And then you would look and be like, oh, he's like 31. That sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Can that possibly be right? And then it was always right. But yeah, other than that, I don't know how much more show there is to, there's nothing really to talk about. Like I said.
Yep. No, I think,
slow news week.
Slowish. Yeah, for sure. Which is fine.
They can't all be winners.
They don't all have to be 2 hours. You go out and you got an extra half hour to do something productive with your life.
People
by which I mean
so pissed
listen to another podcast.
That's right, yeah, another hockey podcast where they're like, here's all the stuff that happened since they stopped recording Puck Soup.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys,
yeah that's tired. that podcast is called 320 Thoughts and it's 7 hours long.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Thanks so much, everybody. Sean, why don't you hit them with the plugs?
Go check out that tank index that I had today. And I've got later this week, hopefully, a new edition of Rules Court, where you approach myself, Sean Gentile, and Ian Mendez with your new rule ideas. And we vote on them. and decide whether they will be enacted and become official NHL rules. Because unlike the NHL GMs, we are open to discussing some stuff. And I got to say, there's some weird stuff. And you guys came up with some plausible ideas and some somewhat less so. But you're creative.
That's how it always goes, right? Yeah. And then obviously for me, EP Rinkside. EPRinkside.com, use the code ILOVEEP, get 3 months added on to the end of your annual subscription, a deal that simply can't be beat. I don't know, I've been writing a bunch for EP lately, so if you need the power feelings, if you need Takedown, if you need what we learned, it's all there. You know what I write by now, right? It's no mystery. And then Patreon, patreon.com/pucksoup. And hey, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of stuff on there. We're trying to really cram in a bunch of bonus episodes before Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, I think I'm legally required to say at this point.
That's right, yeah.
So we got, I think, two more bonus episodes minimum coming later this week, so... check it all out if you're interested in all that stuff. Patreon.com/pucksoup, and people will, I hope, like that. Okay. That's it. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you next week, and hopefully something actually happens.
Yeah.
Till next time. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Pucksoup.